my voice.
Your voice is a little blob on the computer.
It's just a little blob. We all are blobs in life, anyway.
How do you say blob in Latin?
Blob is macula. Macula sumus in vita.
So, Father Foster, you're getting ready for school? What are you preparing for school?
Well, we have all authors from every age, and it's a lot of fun for me because they have to see real people. And so I print up text, about 50 pages of texts, which I have to do these next couple days.
So
everyone, Plautus, I'm going to give them Benedict's first speech to the cardinals.
Okay, I have it here. So,
which I just happened to write myself, but that's all right. Want to see modern Latin? Boom. Here it is.
I've picked out a few things on Benedict's first speech to the cardinals. It's this one, right? Where he says, "If the weight of the responsibility that now lies on my poor shoulders is enormous, the divine power on which I can count is surely immeasurable."
Mm.
So how do you say that?
Well, I don't know how I said it. I must have said it.
So what was special about this Latin that Pope Benedict used? I mean, we discussed Pope Benedict's knowledge of Latin, no?
Yes.
Right when he was elected. How has he come on? How do you think?
I mean, he likes it and appreciates it and wants people to know it. But that's about it. And then what? Practically, what they're going to do about this, you know? How do you get people to know it? Well, you saw in his compendium of the catechism. Have you looked at the compendium?
Yes, I have.
And the last pages, they have all the prayers and things that he would like people to know in Latin. Our Father, Hail Mary, the Creed, etc., etc., all in Latin. That's what he wanted. Afraid of course, not only in his case, but they don't realize what it takes to know Latin. He knows Latin, it's obvious. And his whole life has been every day dealing with this stuff. He doesn't even think about it, got it?
I think it's time to speak about the Second Vatican Council, because that's when the living language was Latin, no?
Mm-hmm.
Can one say that at the time of the council?
Oh, there's no question about
it. Latin was a living language.
That's what I'm saying. He just took the thing for granted. And Felici, and Archbishop Felici, and everyone was speaking Latin.
Summus Pontifex, normas edet ad predictas leges exequendas.
It was just taken for granted. Everything was done in Latin. But you see, this is almost 40, 50 years ago.
And since then, Latin has got squelched.
Well, yes, certainly.
How do you say squelched?
Well, it hasn't been squelched. It hasn't been oppressa est, No. But it was just neglecta est. It has been neglected. Put off on the side. That's the problem. So now we're missing about two or three generations of Latin teachers. The younger priests and younger bishops don't know Latin. And now what do you do? Well, anyway, I'm glad I'm not in charge. I'm in charge of my classroom. Some of the best students in the world of Latin, for Latin, and so forth and so on. But in the church, forget it.
Do you think that your students say their prayers in Latin?
They do. I know they do. I know they do. And some of them are atheists and others are Jews. Half of the students were Jewish this year in summer school, for sure. And they go crazy over this stuff, Latin and Gregorian chant. So they say, well, what about the future of Latin? I'm optimistic on my part for the church. No, I'm not optimistic at all. But that's their business.
Do you ever study Gregorian chant, what's written in the Gregorian chant?
Oh, yeah, certainly.
In school, for example?
Certainly. We did when we were little children in Catholic school, and I present this and explain this to the students. These are graduate students from Harvard, Cambridge, Oxford, and all this other stuff, and they want to know this.
So give me the top 10 of Gregorian chant.
What do you mean the top 10?
top 10
pieces. Pieces.
Yeah. How do you say that? Top 10 favorites?
Amatissima, decem, maxime, exempla. Mm-hmm. That would be the top 10. Well, I'll tell you one of them. One of the students go crazy. Which are St. Thomas Aquinas. His Eucharistic hymns. Well, they don't have any idea about the Eucharist. But, you know, Adoro te devote latens deitas.
Adoro te devote latens deitas.
We sing this stuff in
what does it mean in English?
Well, I
which
adore...
Which is the living language today, by the way.
Well, your language, not mine, anyway. I adore you devoutly, hidden deity. And we sing this in the church. This is the year 1208. In the church where practically he died. He died right behind it, about 20 feet away. St. Thomas died there. And I bring the students there and we sit in the pews and sing his Eucharistic hymns. And they won't move. Fossa Nova.
Oh, in Aquino.
Certainly, to Aquino. You can go down there and
south
sit there.
Rome.
They have a brand new floor. It's out of this world. And I'm sitting there with the students. I said, by the way, our friend Antonio down the road is waiting for us, and he has pizzas and bruschetta and everything else for 50 people. At 7 o'clock, and the students said, no.
We want to go on singing.
Yes, we want to sing the whole thing. I said, I don't care who sings.
So most of these students are not Catholics.
No, most of them are not Catholic. It's beautiful to see. I mean, it's like, you know, they're studying, you know, Mozart or Beethoven or Bach or something like this. These are values, precious things.
It could snowball too, no?
I don't know to what. I hope, maybe.
Something good.
I'm
how do you say snowballing?
Snowballing. Augescere. Potestatim augescere in rem maximam. It could snowball into a big thing. No, we'll see what's going to happen. I'm getting ready for school, and I'll do my share.